It is June 9th. We are in the Chesed. And before we begin, obviously we have to make mention of Rebbetzin Rosenbaum, Rosh Hashanah. I don't think any of us have had a chance really to process everything, and it's going to take us a little while. I want to make two observations, too. One is that if you are hurt and feel sad, bear in mind the Gemara says that it is a mitzvah laharid demos, to shed tears, al adam kasher, on a kosher person. Mm-hmm. It's a mitzvah to do that. And that's for a kosher person. Kosher person means a regular, upstanding Jew. When you're dealing with someone of the caliber of Rebbetzin Rosenbaum, so then the mitzvah is even greater. So one should not feel in any way that there's any any shame in crying over Rebbetzin Rosenbaum, and it is a mitzvah. There will be at some point or other, I don't know when it's going to happen, but there will be some sort of divrei zikaron, some sort of service for a community-wide service for Rebbetzin Rosenbaum. Torah Day School and Rabbi Feldman are arranging, figuring out how it's going to be. The reason why I was a few minutes late is because I walked into Mincha just now in the Kol Beis Medrash, and there was a man there with his shirt torn and in his socks. And he told me that he is from Tzfas, and he is in America because yesterday he was at the Levaya of his mother in Tucson, Arizona. He's on his way back to Eretz Yisrael. So he, of course, davened for the Omer, Mincha just now on the Kol. And then, afterwards, we put a chair down for him, a low chair, and we all said Hamakom Menachem to him. So as I said to the people who davened Mincha just now, there were about maybe 25 or 30 men, as I said to them, the men who had come to learn this evening, that here we feel the loss of Rebbetzin Rosenbaum, and we would like to be there in order to participate in the Shiva and be able to be Menachem Avol, in order to, we wish we were at the Levaya. And here you have a man who came here for his mother's Levaya. He's away from everybody. I'm sure he would have wished that his friends would be with him. He was all alone in Tucson. Who would have been there with him? Maybe some family members, but certainly not his friends, not his neighbors in Eretz Yisrael. And so here he's traveling back, and we had the mitzvah of being Menachem Avol him, whereas we don't have the ability to do so for the Rosenbaum family, at least not in person. HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides mitzvahs when a person wants to do mitzvahs. As you mentioned, there's sad news, and so somebody asked, where is the good news? Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find good news when this sort of thing happens. Even though we anticipated this happening, we knew that she was very sick and it was highly unlikely she would get better. Nevertheless, it's always difficult to take such news. When a person of that caliber passes away, then it is a sad day. And it is difficult to find a silver lining. At the same time, we know that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes someone of that caliber, then it has a significant effect. It's a profound loss for us. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows it's a profound loss for us. And that is taken into account. And so the fact that we are all suffering and we feel that something very important is now gone from our lives, that is part of the ultimate scale that Hashem is constantly weighing. And that goes into the cheshbon, it goes into the calculation. We don't know how many other people are not getting sick, and how many other people have their lives extended because Levinson Rosenbaum was taken. That's an unknown to us, but we do know that that is the power of someone of her caliber. So it's hard for us to see the silver lining, because there's no sign over somebody's head, this person was spared because Revitzer Rosenbaum was taken. But we know that that's the way our Kodesh Baruch Hu operates.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to accept the din from heaven, and we should feel sorrow and we should feel sad, but we accept it. We know that this is the way our Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world, and life does go on and will go on. Now is the time to be sad and to mourn, and there will be times for happiness in the future.
One thing that Rabbi Feldman said to the kindergarten through second graders this morning was, yes, we're sad, but we have to move on. We have to do what we're supposed to do. And he kind of made it as a joke, and the kindergarten, the little kids were actually laughing at it, was we have to eat our snack and eat our lunch and go to recess and do our work. And they just like started giggling. But that's, I think, the point hit to the grown-ups, that yes, we're sad, and yes, we can cry, but we have to continue.
Right. In Yechezkel, we are in Perek Mem Vav, chapter 46, and we are up to Pasuk Yud Tes, verse 19. Our goal this evening is to finish this parak and to move on with the next parak. If we have enough time, I'd like to get as far as through Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12 of Parak Mem Zayin. My track record has not been good when I have these goals, but we're going to make an attempt. We're closing in on the end of Yechezkel. The difficulty is going to be that we only have tonight and next week. The following week, which is the 23rd, I'm going to be out of town. There is some good news. I'm going to be at my wife's youngest sister's wedding.
Mazel
tov! So we will not have class that night. Then the following three Wednesdays are going to be Bina Wednesdays, summer Bina Wednesdays, which will only leave one possible Wednesday left after that. So we are going to try our best to finish as much as we can. We are closing in on a siyum. But I don't know if we'll actually finish before we break for the summer, or whether it will have to wait until we start again in late August. So the pasuk says, "Vayivieni b'mavo asher al kesef hashar." He brought me in the passageway that it was on the side of the gate, el halishchos hakodesh el hakohanim, to the chambers of holiness of the kohanim, haponos safona, that were towards the north. There was a place there on the west. Now, that's a pretty difficult verse to pin down. He's talking about this area over here. We talked about this area when we learned about the Kodesh HaKadoshim and these various, the places to eat there, where the Kohanim would eat their Kachin, the holy sacrifices that couldn't be taken out. So it was a private place for them to eat. There was one in the north, one in the south. He happened to be discussing the one in the north. Remember, we mentioned this last week, that the ones, the northeast and southeast chambers, we don't know if they existed or not. Some say yes, some say no. But these for sure existed. So Yechezkel was in the Chatzar HaPnimi. He was in the inner courtyard. And Hashem took him through this passageway, or the Malach took him through this passageway, into this area here. And now he sees this eating area of the Kohanim. It doesn't say yet that it's an eating area, but we're going to see in a moment that that's what it's for. We mentioned that it was an eating area last time we spoke about it, but the Mefarshim there were drawing from here to know what it's talking about. Vayomer Eli, and he said to me, the Malach said to me, Zeh ha-mokom asher yivashlu sham ha-kohanim, this is the place that the Kohanim will cook, as ha-asham ves ha-chatas, two different types of sin offerings, which are kodshei kodshim, the higher level of sanctity, Asher yofu es ha-mincha, where they will bake the mincha also, that's the flour offering, the meal offering. Livilti hotzi el ha-chatser ha-chitzona, that they should not have to go out to the outer courtyard. Likadesh es ha-am. Now this phrase, likadesh es ha-am, could be mistranslated as to sanctify the people. But that's not the meaning here. Here, es can mean with, as opposed to just a connector. It can mean with the nation. So this is to avoid going into the outer courtyard to sanctify with the people. Because the kadshei kadshim, these higher level sacrifices, cannot go to the common folk. Common folk includes anyone who is not a kohen. And so they have to remain separate. So this room or these rooms are to give them a place to eat privately that they should not have to join with the rest of the nation. Vayotzieni el hachatzer hachitzona, and he took me out into the outside chamber. Vayavireni el arbas miktzoei hachatzer, and he took me around the four corners of the courtyard. Vinei chatzer b'miktzoei hachatzer, there was a courtyard in the corner of the courtyard. Chatzer b'miktzoei hachatzer, a courtyard in the corner of the courtyard. This is now referring to the one thing on this picture which we have not talked about, which are the four chambers in the four corners of this vast outer courtyard. So now Hashem takes him out of here, and he goes along the perimeter of the outer courtyard, and he sees these four corner chambers. Now you see in English it says over here the cooking chambers. Well, we'll see about that in just a moment. So, what were these chambers for? So first he describes them. Be'arabas miktzoos hachatzer, on all four corners of the courtyard, chaferos kituros. There were these unroofed courtyards. Now if they were called separate courtyards, it means they were walled, so there were partitions separating them from the rest of the courtyard, but they were not roofed. Arboim orech u'shloshim rochav. They were 40 by 30 amos. Midachas la arbatam mehuktaos. One measurement for all four, they were in the corners. So they were all the same. They were all 40 by 30. Now what purpose did they serve? The tur saviv bahem, saviv la arbatam, and there was a row, meaning a row of stones, around them, on all four of them, meaning inside the perimeter of these chambers, there was a row of stones going around the four walls. Umivashlos asoy mitachas hatiros saviv, and there were cookers made under these rows all around, which means that these rows of stone were interspersed with holes, and under the holes there was a place to have coals, and you'd be able to cook a pot on top of. It would be like one very long stovetop all around the inner perimeter of these four chambers. Vayomer Eli, he said to me, Eile beis hamivashlim, this is the house of cooking. Asher yivashlu sham mishar si habayis es zevach ha'am, that those who serve in this house will cook the sacrifices of the nation. Now here we're talking about those things that are eaten by the Kohanim, and they have to be cooked. They could be cooked in these areas as well. So that's what these four corners are for. Now, these four chambers seem to mimic the four chambers that were in the four corners of the Ezras Nashim, of the women's courtyard, in the second Beis HaMikdash. Do you have that picture with you? I'll hold it up. Thank you.
Isn't there a walkway that connects them all, from the Nashim?
There was, are you talking about a balcony? Yeah, there is a balcony. I don't know if there was a balcony to go down into them. But here in the second Beis HaMikdash, where, remember, this is the profound difference between the second and third Beis HaMikdash, where for the second Beis HaMikdash, the women's courtyard preceded where the Yisraelim could go and then the Kohanim could go, etc. On the third Beis HaMikdash, this outer courtyard is not a preceding courtyard, it's a surrounding courtyard. Mm-hmm. That's what we have over here. So in this women's courtyard, which is the outer courtyard, you have four chambers. And in the second Beis HaMikdash, there were 40 by 40 amos. Here in the third Beis HaMikdash, they're depicted also in the four corners, but these corners are expanded and surround the entire structure. And these are in the four corners. And so it would stand to reason that the same function that these four chambers had in the second Beis HaMikdash, probably they serve the same function in the third Beis HaMikdash. So what is that function? Dina, would you like to read? He wrote it down in one of the paragraphs over there. We can read it for everybody. No. It's in the commentary itself. I want you to read it. Oh, you're over there. Right. Do you see where it is? At the
Midos 2.5 teaches that at the four corners of the women's courtyard, which corresponds to the outer courtyard of the Peskel, there were four smaller courtyards which were open to the sky. These four enclosures are the ones which are described in our section, although the dimensions in Midos are not quite the same as those given in Yecheskel. The ones in the second temple were 40 by 40 cubits. According to the Mishnah, these enclosures were used as follows.
Okay, here's what we need to know. Go ahead.
The southeastern one was used by the Nazarites to cook their peace offerings.
Okay, southeast is here, okay?
It was there that they burned their hair in the flames over which they cooked the meat of the sacrifices.
Okay, so that's for the Nazir.
The northeastern.
And that's here.
Was used to store wood.
Okay.
It was there that any wormy parts of the wood, which would have disqualified it from being burnt on the altar, were removed.
Okay.
Northwest was for the mikvah, in which the mitzorim immersed themselves on the day they were to become clean. The southwest was used for storing wine and oil.
Okay. All right, so we have four chambers, which all had functions for the Beis HaMikdash. The Nazir, who has to go through a special process of shaving his hair and then burning his hair. The hair has to get burned under the pot that is cooking the meat of the Nazir's sacrifice. The fire that is cooking that pot, that's where he burns the hair. And that was done in this chamber down here.
That's when he's ending
the
meat in the
hair? No. The meat is in a pot over a fire, and in that fire, he burns the hair.
So he burns the hair first and then puts the pot...
No, the pot can go on top. It doesn't matter. Just the hair ends up becoming fuel for the fire, along with whatever else, you know, the wood that's burned over there. It doesn't get into the food. So that was done in this chamber over here.
I'd have to put with a female measure.
It would, I imagine, be the same thing.
Is there a female in that
she time? Had to see her uncovered hair, and if she's shaving off her hair, somebody's seeing it. There's other males in there. There's not snares, right?
Okay. And so then, if that would be, you know, they'd have to figure that one out. But, you know, that can be...
Okay.
But I don't...
You have a women's time and a men's time.
Okay. No, the mikvah was different. So now, here is where they had the wood, or will have the wood. And wood had to be without any worms whatsoever in order for it to be used on the altar. This was for the people who had tzaras. When they became purified, there was a mikveh that they would use. And finally, this one was where they would store oil and wine, which was needed for libations and for meal offerings.
So why do they call them all cooking chambers?
Because they also apparently had places to cook. Okay. Yeah, they bought it off.
Where did this one go to use a mikvah?
So I don't know where it is in this Beis HaMikdash. In the second Beis HaMikdash, it was in the inner chambers. The mikvah of the Kohen Gadol was, I believe, over here. There's actually a machlokas, which side it was on.
Mm-hmm.
But it was towards the inside of the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah.
So I don't know where it would be. It's not described in Yecheskel. Okay. Now we continue through with the next chapter, and here we now get into something which a lot of people know a little about, and so you know how it is when a lot of people know a little bit, it becomes embellished and it becomes largely inaccurate. So here we'll see what Yecheskel actually says and how much we know and how much we don't know. So the pasuk says, Vayeshiveni el Pesach HaBayis, and he returned me to the opening of the Bayis. Now, where is that? Yecheskel has now gone around the perimeter of the outer courtyard. Now he's brought back in to the inner courtyard, to the seeing the opening of the actual sanctuary. Now, I don't know which entrance he used to get in here, but he's now in the inner courtyard again, looking at the entrance to the Heichal, to the sanctuary. Okay. V'hinei mayim yotzim mitachas miftan habayis kadima. And there was water coming out from under the stoop of the house, going east. Now we know that the Beis HaMikdash is in the west, but the doorway is in the east side of the building. The building is here in the west side of the whole complex, but the door of the building is on the east side of this building. So the water was coming out from underneath, somewhere over here, going and was flowing to the east. So the water was headed towards the Mizbeach, towards the altar, coming towards the east. That's where the water was coming out. As we'll see, it was a very, very tiny trickle of water. Ki pnei habayis kadim, for the opening of the house was towards the east. V'hamayim yordim mitachas mikesef habayis hayimonis, and the water was descending, as water always does, it goes down, under, towards the side, the right side of the house, minegev ha-mizbeach, to the south of the Mizbeach. So the water, picture the water walking out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, walking this way, so it's walking this way, and then it made a right turn. So the water came out here, but then it turned right, so that it went to the right of the Mizbeach. And now it's going to go towards the south. And remember, when we've talked about directions in the past, you always picture facing east, your front is to the east, your back is to the west, your right is to the south, and your left is to the north. So Yemanis, to the right, always means to the south. Here, that's the direction that the water went, following the ocean of the water, turned to its right, going now to the south.
Was there a gully, or by itself?
Apparently, the natural slope of the mountain takes it that way, because everything's built on an ascending mountain. So here, if the water's coming out from that area, which is the highest point, or one of the highest points, it's going to go sloping down.
So this was sloping, it wasn't flat, a flat surface where the people walked?
I imagine it was largely flat, but the grade probably allowed for a little bit of a slope. Vayotzieni derech shar tzafona. But now the malach took me out, I don't know if it's a malach, or I guess it must be the malach, took me out on the north side, which is the opposite side from where the water was going. Vayisibeni derech chutz, and he had me go around on the outside, el shar hachutz, to the gate on the outside, derech hapone kadim, on the way that faced east. V'neimayim mefakim min hakasef hayemonis, and behold, water was coming out on the right side. So he had him go out the water was going to the right here. He had him go out this gate here, which is the northern gate of the inner sanctuary, of the inner courtyard, then had him go around, and now he sees the water coming out. It sounds like it's coming out somewhere on the east side, but towards the south part of the east side. So instead of going out this way, it sounds like it's coming somewhere down here, but the water is coming through. So it circumvented the Mizbeach, but now it's going out over here. And he sees it coming out. So he's now in the outer courtyard following this trickle of water, or at least looking at it.
Here it says that the water reached his ankle.
Okay, so we're going to see in a moment that as he describes the water, he describes it with words that imply a larger and larger flow of water. The word mifakim seems to imply ankle depth. Actually, excuse me, that's not true. The word mifakim seems to imply, right, the size of the opening of a flask. And so it's more than before. Before, how did it say it? It just says water. It doesn't say how much. But I'll tell you in a moment how much it was. But so he sees the water coming out on the right side of the east side. But says ha'ish kadim, when the man went out on the east, the kav biyado, and he had the measuring rod in his hand, v'yamad elef ba'ama, and he measured 1,000 amos, v'yavireni b'mayim me'afasim, afsim. and he had me go into the water, it was water up to my ankles. So for the next 1,000 amos, meaning he's following the water towards the east, so he's going out of the Beis HaMikdash complex for 1,000 amos, following the water. Yechezkel was actually walking in the trickle of water, in the stream of water, which is becoming larger. So before it was a tiny trickle, and he's walking in it, it is now the size of ankle depth. Vayamad elef vayavirin v'amayim, and now he measured another 1,000, and he had me go into the water, mayim birkayim. Now it's water up to the knees, and Yechezkel is wading in this water, as it's getting deeper and deeper. Vayamad elef, and now he measured another 1,000, vayavirin v'amayim, and now he passed me through water that was up to my waist.
When you say 1,000, how far is that again?
1,000 amos is between 1,500 and 2,000 feet.
Well, what?
Right. So he's now traveled 3,000 amos.
Out of the eastern gate?
Out of the eastern gate. 3,000 amos, apparently on the downward slope. 3,000 amos is between 4,500 and 6,000 feet, so it's about a mile that he's traveled. And the water has gotten deeper and apparently wider as well.
So you're out of the Beis HaMikdash?
Yes. Yeah, he's headed in this direction. He's headed away from the complex.
Heading east. Are other streams joining this to make it thicker and deeper?
It's not clear. As you'll see, this water is very special water. So why is it becoming thicker? Usually that's true. See, you're making a very good point. Typically, when you have the headwaters of any kind of river, it starts as a very tiny trickle, and then it becomes wider and wider, and that's because new sources of water, melting snow and underground streams, join with this one, and it becomes wider and wider. Where did I read about it? When they found the origination of the Mississippi River, the origination is a tiny trickle. It comes out of a rock. It's a tiny trickle on some, you know, it's nothing. But what happens is as it goes down and more things join it, it becomes this mighty raging river. So that's the way it normally works. So here it seems to be doing the same thing. The only problem is we're going to see that the water is a very special water because it comes from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It doesn't seem that that would be supported by other waters. The other waters would not be this holy water. So it seems that even though it's following what you would expect of a regular river, but there's something missing, which is there isn't other things joining it. And anyway, it's getting larger and larger. So we're going to address that point. So hold that thought. But let's get the whole picture here, and then we'll discuss it. Vayamad elef. Vayamad elef. He measured another 1,000. Nachal asher lo uchal la'avor. A river that I could not pass through. Ki go'u hamayim mei sochu, because the waters had risen, had lifted itself up, to waters that need to be swum in. And you have to swim in them. Nachal asher lo ye'aver, waters that you can, a river that you cannot pass. You have to swim through, you can't walk through. From here, and this is important, from here our sages teach us that it is, I guess they use the word prohibited because it's dangerous, to wade through water that is above one's waist. Above one's waist is swimming water. It is not wading water. Because chas v'shalom, when the water is that high, a person says, oh, I can get in there. But chas v'shalom, a person can be swept away and can drown. So that's very, very dangerous. Now, I don't think that they're referring to a swimming pool water because swimming pool water is stagnant. It's not a flow. But water that is moving, water that is above the waist, should not be waded through. It should be swum through. Is that the right word? The past tense, swim, whatever it is. Okay, or in some way or other. But it should not be expected one should wade through water once it's above their waist. So here he had no longer had Yechezkel walking in the water. Till now he was walking in the water, but at this point he has him walk on the side of this river. Now, before we read further, let me just tell you the various gradations of this water. It starts off, when it comes out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's, hold on. Yeah, first it's this tiny, tiny trickle, which is it's the size of a small insect. Then it becomes the size of a thread, and then it becomes the size of a thicker thread.
Like
and
a cord, you mean?
Yeah. Well, no, and the two ways, the, what is it?
Twine?
Yeah, no, no, no.
The warp.
The woof and the warp. One of them is thinner than the other one. And then it becomes the size of the opening of a flask, and then it, as we read, it gets bigger and bigger as it goes along. Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Vayomer Eli, and he said to me, Haro'isa ben Adam, son of man, have you seen this? Vayolicheni vayeshiveni asfas hanacha, and he brought me and he had me dwell on the side of the river. B'shuveni, when I returned, v'hinei al sfas hanachal eitz rav ma'od. There's a huge amount of trees. There's a bunch of forestry now on the side of this river. And Yechezkel is astounded by this, because when he went following the water, there were no trees. And now he turns back, and all of a sudden there are sprouted these trees. Ma'od, rav ma'od, very great, mizeh mizeh, on either side of the river. V'yomer Eli, he said to me, Hamayim ha'ele yotzim el ha'glila ha'kadmona. This water goes out to the eastern Galil. So, where is that?
Here, there's a comment.
Here he writes, it's the eastern neighborhood. That's the way they read it over here. How does it say it over there?
Yeah.
Well, that would be a mountain. It shouldn't be able to flow up a mountain.
No, but that area.
I guess so. Eastern region. Right, okay. So, it's going to be the Sea of Galilee, the Yam Kinneret.
Is he saying that as he's walking past, all of a sudden the trees grew?
Well, no, he looks back and he sees these trees, where they weren't there before.
So they must have grown?
Suddenly.
Suddenly.
Yes.
Like all of a sudden, like,
yeah.
Cartoon.
Yeah, but we're not done yet. We're not done yet. Hold on.
It's up north.
Well, it's not that far up north from Yerushalayim.
Right, but it's northwest.
Yeah, northeast, right.
East of this.
Right, okay, so that's good. That's true. That's true. But remember, the water's going to flow in a downward direction, gravity-wise. It doesn't matter, you know, what direction north side.
It's not going really
It's not straight down. East. Right, right.
It's going more towards Yarden, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So it goes to this... Well, that's true too. We don't know exactly the yard, but it's not going to be. Well, I don't know. So it says it goes to the Glilah HaKadmona, which apparently is the Yam Kinneret. The Yardu El HaArava. Then it goes down to the Arava, which is referring to, according to Rashi, this is referring to the Dead Sea. Uvo Hayama, and it comes actually Uvo Hayama is referring to the Dead Sea. El Hayama Hamutzaim, and then it comes to the ocean of the wide waters, which refers to the oceans of the world. It goes from there to the oceans of the world. Now, I don't know how it gets from there to the oceans of the world, because the Dead Sea doesn't flow anywhere past the Dead Sea, at least not above ground. So I don't know where...
Maybe there's tunnels underneath.
Very, very possibly. The near Puhamayim, and the water will be healed. This water, it will go into the salty waters of the Dead Sea, and from there into the waters of the great oceans of the world, and they will become healed, which means they will no longer be salty. They will become sweet. And it will be all living creatures what's the word for Yishrots?
Swarm,
thank you. El kolasher yavo sham nachalayim. Wherever this water comes, Yichye will live. V'ayah ha'dagar rabam ha'od, will be a great deal of fish. Kivo sham ha'mayim ha'ela, because this water will come there. V'yirafu, and they will be healed, the water will be healed, v'achaya will live. Kolasher yavo sham ha'nacha, wherever this river will come. V'ayah v'amdu alav Davagim, or Yamdu Alav Davagim Me'en Gedi V'Aden Eglayim, and it will be that there will be fishermen standing from En Gedi until En Eglayim. Mishtoach L'Charamim Yiyu, they will be spreading nets, because there will be the abundance of fish to catch. L'Minat Yedigasam, there will be a plentiful amount of fish. Kidgas Hayam HaGadol Rabba Ma'od, like the river, like the fish of the Yam HaGadol, which is the Mediterranean, that much, that's how much fish will be in that area. be so sav ugvaav, but in the little lakes and I guess swamps, the little areas of water on the sides, v'lo yirafu lemelach nitanu, they will not get healed. They will be given over for salt. See, there is a danger in healing all the waters. Where are you going to get salt from? Salt is taken, at least the way they got salt was from the oceans. They would get water and evaporate the water, and that's how you get salt. So there will be some pockets of salty water which will not get healed. That will be deliberate in order that there should be a place to find salt.
Is that saying that when we have oceans, that means that they're unhealed bodies, or we're being punished somehow?
Oh, so we're going to discuss this. Hold that thought. V'hanachal yale al svaso mize umize, and on the river it will rise up on its sides, on either side, on its banks on either side. Kol itzmachal, all trees that have bear fruit. Lo yibol, what's that?
It's got three E's.
Three E's,
tree.
Yeah.
Three, oh.
That's three E's in tree.
Okay. Lo yibol alehu, its branches will not wither, or its leaves will not wither. V'lo yitom piryo, and its fruits will not end. L'chadashav yivaker, every month it will produce new fruit. Kimemav mina mikdash hema. Hema yotzim, because its waters are coming out of the Beis HaMikdash. V'haya piryo l'ma'achol, and its fruits will be for eating. V'aleu lisrufa, and its leaves for healing. They'll be medicinal. Apparently. Rashi says that he brings from Chazal that it will give the mute the ability to speak, and those who are barren, it will give them children. Komar Hashem. No, sorry, till there. That's what I wanted to get to. Perfect. Okay. So this is what happens with this water. Now, as the water goes through, and it's going to do all of this, so it will cause an abundance of fruit and growth, and it will be water that will heal. Now, remind me, what was the point you brought up before I said did hold the thought?
Other waters coming in.
Right, okay. And then we also have the issue of the salty water. So now let's think through back to the back to when the world was created. Rabbi Eisman, in his introduction to this chapter, also goes back to that time. We're gonna parallel what he says, but we're not gonna take it won't be exactly the same explanation. But he has a very nice one if you want to read that as well. So let's understand, where does the salty water come from? Remember that when the world was first created, there was water.
That was upper and the lower.
Well, before there was upper and the lower, there was just water. Right? There was water. V'choshech al pnei sahom, there was the depths, there was water. The water then was separated on the second day. V'yavel Elohim, he separated. Now, separation is the consequence of creation. That the fact that there's creation, there's separation, because we are separated from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The whole way that we can ever serve Him and have our mission is to be separated from Him to some extent, because if we were connected to Him the way we want to be connected to Him, it would be impossible for us to have any challenges. We would just know the truth, and that will be that.
It's also interesting that for our kids to grow and become, you know, have their own character, they need also to separate.
That's correct. From their parents. Correct. Now, the waters were separated. Now you have Mayim Elyonim and Mayim Tachtonim. You have the upper waters and the lower waters. The lower waters, we know what that is. That's the water down here on earth. The upper waters, we do not know what that is. We don't know what upper waters means. Certainly no water has been discovered upstairs yet. And we don't know what it means, because whatever it is, it's way up. And we don't understand it. But there is some concept called the Mayim Ha'elyonim, the upper waters. The lower waters, the ones down here, we know that the earth is primarily made up of water. There's more, at least there's more surface water than there is land. And we know that on day two, when the waters were separated, the entire globe was surrounded by water. There was no visible land. Then on day three, Hashem said that there should be, the waters should recede, and the waters should be grouped into certain specific areas. And by doing so, the Seroe HaYabasha, then the dry land should become visible. Of course, you can't sustain life without that happening. And then, once that happens, you can have vegetation and trees, etc., and you can have animal life, and then, of course, people. So, that's the separating of the waters. We know that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to destroy the world and recreate it, he does so with a flood. Because the flood is the reversal of what happens on day three. When Noah, when the world is destroyed through the flood, essentially what happens is the world, the waters cover the land, and the land now becomes a place which cannot, the world becomes a place that can't sustain life anymore. Then, when Noah then lives through the flood, and now a new era begins, the water recedes and we're back to visible land.
Almost like washing the earth.
Okay.
Okay.
On the other hand, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing a nes, and we Jews are acting in a way that deserves that there be a greater infusion of the Shekhinah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Hashem's divine presence, then we have the capacity for the waters to even move away from where they're supposed to be. As in crossing of the Yam Suf, of the Red Sea, and also crossing of the Yarden, of the Jordan, that when those things happened, when the Jews did that, the waters which are supposed to be there move away. That's the capacity of that. That is not, that is rather than in stark contrast to the Mabul, which was the undoing of the day three of creation, it's actually increasing what day three did. That we were able to even move beyond where the natural boundaries were.
What about the Habuk, when it came rushing into the enemies? The Habuk River? When it
That was to destroy the enemies. Right.
Right. That's again.
That's the same. Right. Right. Now, so the more the waters move away to allow for more life implies a greater right to live, a greater connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whereas the more the waters cover the livable area, that implies a moving away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why it has to happen. Now, that's true with waters that don't sustain life. That's true with water that is considered to be sick waters, salty waters, water that's not drinkable. That's considered to be water that does not sustain life. Most of the water on this planet does not sustain life, at least not human life. Here we have water that's going to come out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is not going to remove life, it's going to sustain life. And in fact, it's going to take other waters, which are meant to not sustain life, and make them to waters that will sustain life. Now, we know that water, even salty water, does sustain marine life, but only certain types of marine life. It doesn't sustain freshwater marine life, only saltwater marine life. The implication over here is that there will be certain types of fish that will thrive and grow in this new era of perfect waters. So this is going to come from under the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The waters will come in a tiny, tiny, tiny trickle, which will then expand, but without having other waters join it. And it will expand and expand and expand. Meaning that as the water moves on, it will increase its ability to sustain life. It will represent the Shekhinah, the spiritual aspect of Hashem's divine presence, entering this world and healing everything. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not water. Water is physical, and that's not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it will be some sort of an interface between the upper realm and the lower realm. where the waters that were separated, and you have the waters down here, the waters upstairs, which whatever those waters are, this is going to be somehow the interface. The waters that are going to come out from under the Kodesh HaKadoshim are going to be somehow this more perfect and pure water, which will then move on and heal all the other waters. It is fascinating that the symbol of the world reaching a greater level of perfection, because that's what's being symbolized over here. The trees are going to be the types of trees that were meant to be originally. That the tree itself will be edible, not just the fruit that it bears. Right. Right, which is what was supposed to be originally in creation, and it didn't happen. We talked about that in our creation class way back when. So here, that's what's meant to happen as well. That which is meant to show more perfection, more of a utopian world, is manifest with water and with marine life in particular. The fish will be abundant. The waters will be healed. That's what will, more than anything else, will symbolize this new world of incredible bounty, is the waters. You would have thought, or one could have thought, that perhaps it should be trees, perhaps it should be air, perhaps it should be land that is able to be cultivated and grow, but it is water that symbolizes it more than anything else. It is not coincidental that, and we did have a class on this maybe a year and a half ago, on Sukkos, it is not coincidental that the symbol of the future, of this utopian world, is going to be a Seuda, a feast, of the Livyasan, which is a sea creature. A sea creature of some sort, which we know exists, but we don't know where it is, and we know it's gigantic, but somehow it's eluded any sort of detection by the scientific world. But we know there is such a creature, and it's going to be the feast of that Livyasan, that the tzaddikim will be sitting in a sukkah, in a divine sukkah, and eating of this Livyasan meat, the fish meat. So somehow that becomes the symbol of perfection, of the future, more than anything else, which is striking. It's really striking, because you would think that the water is really further removed, because people can't live in the water. The water is a place where people can't live. The water limits, the oceans limit our ability to live. They don't increase our ability to live, they limit it. I don't have much more to say about that. To me, that's a striking observation. But here it seems that this is building on that. That the idea of more perfect waters, more perfect marine life, the trees that are growing, but they're growing on the banks of this river, that seems to be the ultimate symbol of the world reaching its perfection. The world reaching the point that it connects to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It cannot be ignored that we know that water is always a symbol for Torah, in Mayim Ela Torah. So that can't be ignored, and of course that's very, very significant. But there is certainly a greater depth over here that could be thought about and discussed. But that's an observation to share, and perhaps at a later date we'll take it further than that. So maybe at a siyum for Yechezkel we'll expound more on this whole idea.
Yeah. Two questions. One, if you have a tree like this, then do you have to wait the 3 years because you every month?
Good question.
And
I don't know.
Do with like the first fruit?
Good. Good question.
Okay.
I don't know the
answer. And then the other one you were talking about, you don't know what the upper waters are, but at the beginning of this Sefer, didn't it describe some sort of ice block?
Yes, it did.
Separated?
Yes,
so
it did.
That, I mean, to me, water and ice are...
Akerach HaNora, it said. The awesome ice.
That the angels couldn't get past to get to the throne.
We discussed it then.
I don't know where I was.
No, we discussed it then. Hold on, wait, I'll tell you where it is.
While you're looking, Rabbi, I also remember learning that what makes this world different the earth is going to get another planet is water. There is no other planet
okay.
in the world.
That they know of.
That they know of. That,
right.
And that's what's capable of around the planet.
Perek Aleph, it's verse. It's chapter 1, and it's Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22. That above the Chayos, above these beings, was a ceiling of sorts that was Ke'en HaKerach HaNora, similar to the awesome ice. Whatever that is. Right. Okay, so, you know, this is...
We have a little glimpse of what water might be, because water makes ice.
Right, right. So we don't know exactly what
we
it
know
is.
We know that angels can't go past it.
The next week in Mitzvah Hashem, when we start Pasuk Yud Aleph, we're going to move back into the discussion of the actual inheritance in Eretz Yisrael, the land, the possession, which tribes go where. We've discussed it a little bit, but we're going to go more in depth over there. I believe that we are done now with this map of the Beis HaMikdash as we move into that. That will be the balance of this parak, of parak Mem Zayin, and then of course we have one more chapter after that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.